take to this hour before. Please be seated.
Good morning, I'm Judge Castle. To my right is Judge Mormon. To my left is Judge Lance. We're here today in the matter of Juarez versus Nicholson, docket number 050080. I'll ask counsel for both parties to introduce themselves, but I understand that the veteran is actually here, and you may want to introduce him to the court. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thomas Niffin for the secretary. To my right, Mr. Brian Ripley.
Thank you very much. Are both parties ready to proceed? You have 30 minutes and you may reserve time.
I'd like to reserve 10 minutes.
All right. You may proceed.
Counselor, let me interrupt. Why did you not then appeal in 1996? Here we are in 2007. We've got the issue of res judicata. You believe that it was an improper finding by the board in 96, but no appeal followed. Why is that?
I don't think it really matters why Mr. Juarez didn't appeal in 96.
Well, you concede that he did not within the statutory
Correct.
Framework.
He did not.
Okay.
I believe, however, that based on the information provided to him in 1996, at best, he could have appealed the 1996 denial of reopening. However, since his claim, since the 1955 decision was not yet final, he didn't have the burden of reopening. And so I believe that whether he appealed from what was termed a denial of reopening,
But that's what you're arguing here today, right?
I'm sorry. I'm arguing that whether he appealed in 1996 is immaterial.
Right, right. The issue of reopening was not properly decided in your opinion. Okay.
Thank you.
Counsel, with regard to the board's finding concerning the presumption of regularity with regard to notice of the 55 decision. Is this court bound by that? And if so, why?
I believe that the board made a finding of fact that the 1955 decision was not properly mailed to the appellant. That's a favorable finding of fact in the circumstances of this case, which this court cannot disturb. It's also not being challenged by Mr. Juarez. Really, I think the only legal conclusion that one can draw from a finding that the notice of the 1955 decision had not been properly mailed is that the claim was open and pending up until some point in the future. The board
is that a finding of fact or is that a legal conclusion?
That the claim remained open?
Yes.
And
the board said that they found that the presumption of regularity had been rebutted.
Correct.
So why is that a binding factual finding with regard to whether or not IRS received the notice?
Again, the precursor to this is the finding that the 1955 decision is not, had not been, notice of the 1955 decision had not been provided to Mr. Juarez. That's the finding of fact that the court is bound by. To take it one step further, the question of does that render the decision still open and pending, I believe the question is that a finding of fact or a conclusion of law? I believe that is a conclusion of law, which this court could review de novo, does review de novo. But again, that seems to be the only conclusion one can draw and is supported by this court's case law. When the VA has not followed the procedural requirements of providing notice of a decision, a rating decision, or decision statement of the case, that renders the period in which the appellant may disagree or take the next step in his claims process on hold.
I understand your argument, counsel. I don't want to belabor the point, but I just want to make sure that you have pointed me to the finding of fact that the board made that is binding on this court with regard to the delivery of the notice.
Well, the board found on its explanation is on pages 10 and 11, where the board stated that the decision was mailed to an incorrect address. And the board says, in light of the foregoing, the board finds that the presumption of regularity has been rebutted, which is what you asked me at the outset.
I'm still having trouble, counsel, with what you just said with regard to the board finding that the notice was sent to an incorrect address. I see that the board found that the presumption of regularity had been rebutted.
How about on page 3, finding of fact number 2? In an August 1955 rating decision, the RO denied the veteran service connection for back disability. However, because the August 1955 letter advising the veteran of the determination was not sent to his address of record, the veteran was not notified at the time of the determination.
Thank you.
Again, I think the only conclusion one can draw from that finding is that the claim remains open and pending up until some point in the future. And the question that is presented here is, was the April 1996 letter from the regional office that said no new and material evidence has been submitted the point at which that mailing defect was cured?
And why wasn't it?
Well, really, that's all the letter said. The letter said no new and material evidence has been received.
What's the page say?
362. What we decided, new and material evidence adequate to reopen the claim for service connection for back injury and bilateral hearing loss has not been submitted. I note that the board decision specifically refers to the April 1996 letter, which is what I just read from, and not to the rating decision itself, but even if the court were to use the board's words expansively to include the attached April 1996 rating decision, that provides a little more information. It says service connection for back injury was denied in August 1955. The cited medical records do not show incurrence during service.
Why isn't that sufficient to put him on notice?
For a variety of reasons. First of all, the reason cited in this decision is different from the reason that was cited in the 1955 rating decision. In 1955, the rating decision said the claim was denied because present disability was not found. I think we need to examine this in the context of what are the requirements for providing notice of a decision in 1996 when this was given. And that's squarely governed by 3.103, which lists. Claimants and their representatives are entitled to notice of any decision made by VA affecting the payment of benefits or the granting of relief. Such notice shall clearly set forth the decision made, any applicable effective date, the reasons for the decision, the right to a hearing on any issue involved in the claim, the right of representation, and the right, as well as the necessary procedures and time limits, to initiate an appeal of the decision. So while the April 1996 decision was probably just perfectly fine for purposes of letting Mr. Juarez know that he had not presented new and material evidence to reopen the claim, it didn't give him anywhere near the information that he would really need to know about the 1955 claim, a decision having been made, what was the basis for the decision, that he had supposedly had 1 year from the time it was sent to him in which to disagree, that if he didn't disagree within that time period, the decision would become final, and that his only option at that point would be to reopen with new and material evidence. That information was not provided in the April 1996 letter, and for that reason, I think it's defective.
And why is it then that was not appealed at that time?
Are you asking the actual factual reason?
No, I'm just saying that there was generated at that moment in time a right to appeal, right?
I believe that Mr. Juarez certainly could have filed an appeal at that time saying, I didn't get the 1955 decision that you say denied my claim, but I don't think he had an obligation to do it because VA had not provided him sufficient information, that laundry list that I just went through. So he could have, and that would have saved him a good bit of time, but he didn't, and I don't think that's harmful to his claim. I don't think it matters.
So you don't think the passage of time deteriorated or eroded his legal rights in terms of appealing?
If it took VA 40 years to send him notice of his decision, then he had until the time he was given adequate notice of that decision to appeal. The way it worked out in this case is that a subsequent claim was granted and an effective date was established. At that point in time, Mr. Juarez said, I disagree with that effective date. And that, I think, brings us to the Myers case.
But Myers is different, isn't it? Because we have a transfer of jurisdiction with an NOD.
Correct. The facts are not identical. In this case, though, Mr. Juarez couldn't file an NOD. That really being the point. He didn't get the initial decision.
Why isn't it all part of the same claim stream? You don't get notice of a denial. You ask about that claim. In asking about that claim, you submit another letter which evidences that you are aware that you had submitted a claim and hadn't got an answer back in 54 or 5. And then you get a denial for new and material. Your claim can't be reopened because you don't have new and material evidence. And within the decision, it says that your previous claim was denied in 855. Why isn't that all part of the same claim stream? And if you disagree with the fact that you are not getting benefits, why aren't you required to appeal since you were given appellate rights, could take that entire decision up and appeal it? Why isn't that the case here?
Again, this isn't precisely what you asked, but I'd like to make this comment first. The board didn't even rely on the decision itself. It relied only on the notice letter. The accompanying letter just says you've not provided new and material evidence. Again, though, if the court wished to read that expansively so that it includes the decision, which does say your claim was denied in August 55, again, I believe Mr. Juarez could have filed a notice of disagreement at that point, and none of us would be here today. But I don't see it as being part of the same claim stream.
And what authority do you have for that?
For the reasons set forth in Myers. I read Myers, I understand your concern, Your Honor, about there having been a transfer of jurisdiction in that case because an NOD was filed, and so the case was awaiting action by the board. Is Mr. Flores to be penalized that VA didn't send him the rating decision? I think it's indisputable that certainly in 1955, he wasn't given notice of the denial of his claim. In 1996, for someone to just say, your claim was denied in August 1955, not to even give him the correct basis for that denial, not to tell him, this is what you have to do about it.
Well, what support, let's assume that he just filed a claim directly in 1996, and the only thing he got was your claim is denied, and here's your appellate rights. And he didn't file within the year. Would you say his appellate rights were not, that he hadn't, you know, he didn't follow in the rights that he was accorded because he didn't get more notice about why he was denied?
Well, such a notice wouldn't comport with the requirements of 3.103 because it doesn't provide the reason.
But that's why you can appeal.
Correct.
I mean, is there any case law that says that if you don't get more notice of your denial that it stays the time in which you can appeal even though you got your notice of appellate rights at the RO level?
I think we're having a fundamental disconnect perhaps because I don't view the appellate rights attached to the 1996 decision as giving him any information about the 1955.
Right, but it did give him information about a claim that he had associated for a back injury.
Correct.
Which was denied because there was no new material information.
Correct.
So it couldn't be reopened.
And that would have been a much easier case, wouldn't it?
No, I think that's the information you got as we're looking at the record, trying to figure out what law you have supporting your position. It seems to me to say that because you were only told that new material evidence was not submitted, that that's insufficient to put you on notice to appeal. And I'm asking, what case law do you have to support that?
I'm not aware of any cases that are analogous to that.
Okay. Because you did refer us to a single judge opinion for its persuasive authority.
Correct.
And it seemed to me that that was different also, that particular case that you cited us to. That the persuasiveness of it doesn't apply to this particular case. If I can find it. There was the requirement that a board decision actually be mailed to the individual at that time, as I recall. And this is talking about an RO decision and notice associated with an RO decision.
I'm sorry.
Okay, that's fine. You may continue.
Again, as I already stated, I believe that in order for the April 1996 notice to have been curative, it would have needed to tell Mr. Flores, there was a decision in 1955. You denied your claim for the following reasons. You had a year in which to disagree. If you didn't, the decision became final, and your only option at that point is to reopen based on new and material evidence. Since that didn't happen, I don't see how the 1996 notice can be viewed as having cured that defect.
If there are no other questions from the other members of the panel and you have some additional time, I'm going to return to this issue that I addressed with you originally. I'll tell you exactly, counsel, what troubles me here. What troubles me is that this is a really unusual case with regard to this address that was used by the RO in 1955.
Correct.
Because there's nothing in the record, as I read it, that indicates indicates how VA got that address, and yet it's the address where the appellant wound up living shortly after the VA mailed this notice to the address that was not otherwise in the record at VA.
Correct.
So I'm troubled, candidly, by the conclusion that this court is asked to view as binding, that somehow a mailing to an address where the appellant's spouse resided with her mother, as I understand it,
before
they were married, and then an address that the appellant subsequently resided at for some years, and apparently he purchased the property, happened to be the right address. And the mere fact that VA happened to have the right address somehow doesn't meet the requirements for adequate notice, an adequate delivery. Now, I can understand where that would rebut the presumption of regularity. What I'm having trouble with is whether or not there's a real finding here that the notice went to the wrong address. And that's, so help me with that, if you would, please.
It is quite peculiar, but there is truly nothing in the record or that I saw in the claim file that's not in the record for VA to have had any knowledge of that address, because at that point in time, Mr. Juarez was not living at that address. I don't know where it came from. It is extraordinarily peculiar that it ended up being a correct address at a later point in time, but as of the 1955 mailing, it was not his address. It was not where he was living. It's not an address that appeared in the claims file. It's not an address that VA...
But where would VA have gotten that? They clearly, you know, didn't pull it out of thin air. I mean, all our cases refer to sending something to the wrong apartment or sending something in the wrong zip code, and I understand all that case law. And, you know, by golly, a veteran deserves to get notified. But where VA, by clairvoyance or whatever means, comes up with an address where the veteran lives subsequently, and apparently within 2 weeks of the time they mailed the letter, I'm having trouble with the idea that that's a notice to the wrong address.
It's very peculiar as well that the address on the actual rating sheet is different still. I don't know. I wish I could answer you, but I honestly don't have an answer to that question.
Okay, thank you, Counselor.
If there is a finding by the board and it's not supported by inadequate reasons or basis, but it's a favorable finding, do you believe the court has the authority to remand it for a reasons and basis? Any other questions? You reserve the balance of your time? Thank you.
May it please the court? The secretary today.
I have a question off the outset. On 2 August, the secretary filed with the court a notice of supplemental authority, one of which is dated back in 2006, and I looked it up, September of 2006. I'm curious as to why this would only come to the attention of the secretary so late in the day that a few days before our argument you would submit it.
It was, the decision was rendered after the briefs were filed.
Well, even if they were rendered after the briefs were submitted, why would this come in a few days before oral argument, which is a year after the case was issued?
Well,